Welcome to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen with Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio, a show to help you get from where you are to where you truly want to be. Now here's your host of Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen, Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio.
Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Jennifer Grace and welcome to Getting Unstuck and Making Shift Happen. I'm very excited about today's show. I'm bringing back an incredible guest, Tiger Khan. She has over 20 years experience and is a natural born clairvoyant and clairaudient whose ancestry dates back to King David. She's a direct descendant of the legendary healers, miracle workers, prominent Kabbalists of Eastern Europe. And she has served as an advisor for over 8 years for the Tibetan Healing Fund, which is Tibet's first freestanding birth center, which opened its doors in the town of Ripong in 2009. She's been featured in many popular magazines, including W Magazine, Black Book, LA's Magazine, Best of LA, as well as on my old show, the Hay House Radio Show. And I'm super excited to bring her on today because she has been working on a book, Intuition, Language of the Soul, that is going to be released in August of 2016. And she has been working on this book for over 7 years. This book is extraordinary, very, very special. It transcends the typical notions of self-perception, and it guides individuals into the path of finding their purpose in life, accepting their truth, and developing a greater relationship with their soul and intuition. Now, people don't need to see the future, but we all should heed and listen to the voice of our souls. And in this book, she shares the mysteries that she has experienced throughout her entire life. And while many are clairvoyant or clairaudient in nature, every individual inherently understands the needs of their soul, consciously or not. And the intuitive arts can help build and maintain memory as it leads to greater awareness and interconnectedness. So getting in touch with our inner sense of knowing can benefit every aspect of life. Developing intuition is really an important goal for all of us. And Tiger shares throughout this book incredible insight on how we can activate our soul's realization and our own inherent gifts within. So I am so thrilled to bring Tiger on the show today to share with you some of the deep concepts of her new book. Tiger, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jen, and thank you so much for reading the information about my book.
Yes.
It's been, right when you, it's funny listening to that.
Yes.
You know, when somebody actually reads some of it and you're like, oh, it was 7 years and a lifetime, actually, in writing this book. And I'm really excited to share it with people because in it, I'm bringing out some hidden messages that are in Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism. And yes. I'm sharing it with people as part of also my journey as a, you know, cancer survivor and a natural born clairvoyant and everything that I've learned from it and what it meant to go back to my lineage and uncover some of these mysteries and secrets and bringing them out. So revealing the concealed, one can say.
Wow, that is incredible. That is so wonderful to have you share that with the world. I know that there are such incredible mysteries tied in Kabbalah. And so I'm wondering, would you share some of these Kabbalistic insights with us today?
We're going to start with a really easy one.
Okay.
So everybody that's listening, I want you to take a moment and look at your fingerprint. Look at your finger, actually. Okay, so take a look.
I'm doing it.
All right, so we all have a fingerprint. Now, does anybody in the entire world have the same fingerprint?
No.
Isn't that wild? So how many people are in the world? How many billions of people?
Right.
Not one single person has the same fingerprint, not even identical twins. So this is already a hint and to tell you how the Creator actually gave you a very specific purpose in this world that only you can fulfill. And once you start understanding, you know, the finger is the opening to understanding. And when you realize what just a simple finger can do, it will help you comprehend the full impact of why you're here, which is temporary. Because a finger can do very positive things and very negative things, as we know, which we've actually seen, you know, going on in the media, unfortunately.
Yes.
You know, a finger pulls the trigger. But a finger can also help bring in a child into this world, you know?
Right,
the fingers can. So, you know, that alone, when you see that every part of you has such a strong purpose that you can actually use your body to do good in this world, or you can use it for negativity. And now we lead to a very deep secret, which I'm happy to share.
Thank you.
So, which goes like this. Okay, so how many of us feel that we have always, we're always fighting two parts of ourselves? Do you ever feel that way?
Yes, the itty-bitty beep committee that lives inside my head, and then my voice of wisdom.
Well, so Kabbalah talks about specifically what's called Tanya, T-A-N-Y-A, but Kabbalah speaks about being born with two souls. So we are not just born with one soul, we're born with two souls in that we have our spiritual soul and we have our body, but our body has a soul. Our body has its own soul. So these two souls within you are always fighting, like two wolves or two cities. And so really, what it is this is a lifelong struggle that everybody goes through. And it's not that one part is bad and one part is so good, although the soul is pure. I know there are a lot of people that disagree with that, but that's okay, right? I mean, the soul, that which has come from the Creator, is pure. And your body has, it's the difference between raw and refined energy. So your body has inherent desires. And if we didn't have these desires, we wouldn't get married. We wouldn't have jobs. We wouldn't have children. We wouldn't do really, and we wouldn't feed ourselves, right? We wouldn't do any of these things because it's your body that wants to do these things. Your spiritual soul wants to just chill and meditate and, you know what I mean? Be one. Stay connected.
Right.
And so many people feel they have to separate these two parts of themselves. Well, I can either be very spiritual and meditate, or I'm going to just go out and do whatever I feel or, you know, feed my body. It's sort of like being on a diet or being very strict. And it doesn't work because it's not balanced. So part of what I cover in my book is speaking about, one, accepting the duality within yourself. You're always going to have that. That's lifelong. And two, it's not so much about squashing your body's desires, because that doesn't work, right? I mean, it's inherent, but it's about elevating and refining them so that what your body desires is actually a little more elevated. So, you know, instead of, like, think back, I don't know, most teenagers try smoking, for instance, right?
Right.
But then once you, you know, grow up and get out of that, whatever level of maturity it is, you don't want to do that to your body because it doesn't feel good. And so you start elevating. You want to put good things into your body. So that's kind of how it works. So that's one thing that I cover is that we're born with two souls.
And what do you feed? You know, the wolf story. It's like, which one are you going to feed the most?
And the other thing is, and it's there are two very important misconceptions that most people have, which then gets in the way, too, of developing intuition. So one, the very first misconception is that we are separated from our Creator.
Right.
And I challenge that because, okay, how can we be separate from what we are derived? Our cells separated from other cells, from the living organism of which it's a part of, is a star separate from a galaxy. And think about it. What happens when a cell goes rogue and it disregards its connection?
It burns out.
It destroys itself. Listen. When a cell goes, you know, thinks it's on its own, it destroys itself. Mm. It functions abnormally, and it destroys the vehicle.
Well, that's a great metaphor.
We are all part, you know, so if our cell is part of a greater, you know, part of our body, and, you know, the star is part of the galaxy, and we are part of the Creator, so we are never separate from God. Mm. And most people think we are, and we're not. I mean, we can do things that mess with the connection, but we ourselves are not separate. And then the other thing, which I covered, is, well, we have to sacrifice the needs of the body in order to be spiritual. That's not true. We just have to integrate.
Right.
So those are two very important ideas. Actually, they're not ideas, really truths, that we can contemplate, because once we contemplate that, then the closest thing that gets us to start to become intuitive and gets us in touch is to understand the language of our soul. So if we want to become more intuitive and more psychic, then we have to understand our soul. But we also have to balance out our body so that we have enough strength to get in touch with our soul.
How important do you feel meditation is in cultivation of intuition? Do you feel like it's the complete foundation?
Well, yes and no. So meditation is important to create stillness within yourself. Okay. But if you're going to just create stillness to achieve emptiness, that then I'm not sure how much that will help you in your daily life. Now, if you create stillness to achieve a connection, higher connection, so that then you can go out and use this energy to be productive, that's the fuel that's going to really, you know, activate that intuition. Because, you know, true emptiness, you don't want to do anything. Think about it. And I know that, you know, you're just sitting there and you want to meditate and you want to meditate some more and more and more. And then you start distancing yourself from society. And you're a mother. You know that, you know, doesn't fly very long.
You know, for me, meditation creates space, you know, for that voice of wisdom, for my intuitive voice to arrive, not on the cushion, you know, really later in my day, just creating that space, and not being my thoughts, my worrying about the future, regretting the past, all of the scenarioizing that goes on, you know, having that time each day to have a space between the thoughts. And that space for me translates in the rest of my life. You know, that act of coming back to the breath, coming back to the mantra, you know, when I find myself maybe reeling out, you know, my mind was in the brain gym that morning, and I come back to the moment. And in that moment, there's the space. And from that, the wisdom can come forth. So for me, it's just the space creation.
That's very important. Yeah. But also now let's up the game here. So how about, I mean, meditation is prayer. So how about then we also, you know, you say mantra, prayer, we make a connection, because really the ultimate is we want to connect to something greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
And when we connect to, you know, we open up gates of understanding, gates of energy. And I know because, you know, I left this world. I had a near-death experience. Well, actually, I left and I came back and I was sent back. And, you know, I saw gates. I was, you know, many people that have experienced what I experienced, we all say the same thing. I know, because I've talked to plenty of people, and we've all had a very similar experience.
Similar.
Yeah. So to me, when I, you know, after that, I wanted to, I saw that, you know, there was truth, and I wanted to get connected. So meditation was not going to be enough. I had to add prayer into that, you know, and the prayers that I started were the Psalms, which anybody can go to. I'm also directly descended from King David. And when you research, and I also get into my into this in my book. So yeah. King David was a clairvoyant. He was a seer. And he saw that in the future, people were going to have the same struggles that they had then. He was also a man, you know, who approached God in a very humble manner, like, you know, with all my faults and everything I did, and I'm approaching you as a human being with everything. I am not perfect. So he composed these Psalms, which are mantras, unbelievable mantras, and they open up gates. And when you really understand the Psalms, even just saying them, like, there's a Psalm for practically every situation. And I even have a chapter on soulmates, and there's a Psalm there that can help open up a gate that can, you know, open up to connections, to connecting with your soulmate. I mean, not guaranteed, of course, but it, you know, it's like anything. Why not?
Well, it's intention with this mantra, and it's activation, you know, and this is sacred text here. So I think that combination is so powerful.
Yeah, and especially when you think about it, I mean, these are thousands of years old. And there's a reason why, you know, mantras, prayers, when they've been around for thousands of years old, they've been battle-tested.
Yeah. Well, you've really given me something. It's so funny. I do all this practice, right, to cultivate my intuition, to create space and clarity and knowing. And I've just always had this assumption that I'm connected. You know, I remember reading Gary Renald's book, The Disappearance of the Universe, a zillion years ago. And, you know, his whole take was, everything's already occurred. This is all a playback. We're already with God, you know, and it's just a movie that we're living out right now, but we're with God now. And so it's, I'm just like there already, and I'm having fun in this play that I'm in down here. But I kind of just assumed that and put that there, but didn't cultivate that connection, you know, with Source in this way that you are offering right now. So I want to let you know how important this conversation is with me, because, you know, not only it's almost like I was taking responsibility for my own wisdom and forgetting that I am connected to this great source of inspiration, of love, of everything that is available to me.
Well, just all people, you know, I ask people a question that, you know, for people that don't believe in, let's say, intuition or clairvoyancy, I ask, well, do you believe in a creator? And a lot of them will say yes. And, you know, because you can walk outside and you can see the intelligence of the natural world, right? You know, who created that? And so then I take it a step further. There's so much about the natural world that we don't begin to understand, although, again, in my book, there's a whole chapter of prayer and the forest and the language of the forest and trees. I'm really big about the forest. And so I ask them, so if you look at that and you see that the natural world has this inner connection, then we are a part of the natural world as well. So then we also are connected. So yes, I agree with what you're saying that this author said. We are always connected. This is true. I mean, we are part of creation. However, our actions that we take, and this has to do with personal responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, so many of us assume, well, I can just do nothing and just stay there. It doesn't work like that. Because we can also sever our connection, even though we're connected, but we ourselves can create a lot of problems for ourselves, even if it's temporary. So if you go out and you do crazy, crazy stuff, then, you know, you're not exactly connected. So that's why it has to be through actions. Because remember, we're made up of raw and refined energy. Our raw energy is our body. Our refined energy is our soul. So how do we integrate these two? That's number one. Number two, so there's two ways to approach life, which is, well, inspiration or expiration. So in other words, so let's say the more and more we go into just spirituality, more and more and more, and I saw this in my school, the old meditation school I was a part of, or any ashram. This is what I've seen this. I've talked to a lot of people about this. So they get more and more, they meditate, they go deeper, they start, as we talked earlier on, they don't, they're not really connected to their families anymore, they're not connected to society, they get sort of high, they become junkie highs, right?
Right.
And so you want to get closer and closer to that energy till it's really about expiration. And a lot of people were having all kinds of physical problems and leaving this world way too young because they weren't taking care of themselves or their bodies. Or we can do inspiration, which is lead by example. But it's going to have to be very physical acts. So again, intuition, you asked me earlier if meditation is a way to activate intuition. That's one way. But I also speak about going, walking through the forest, doing prayer, doing actual, you know, whether they're mantras or psalms. In my book, I recommend psalms. Physical ways, keeping a Shabbat, which is a 24-hour rest, to, you know, feed your body, take care of your body, and integrate your soul with your body. So these very three specific things, which are Kabbalistic insights, as a way to develop intuition, because it's going to get you in touch with your soul, and your soul's natural language is to speak to you through intuition.
Right. I want to take a 24-hour rest.
Well, it has to be systematic, too.
Yeah.
Weekly. You know, I mean, traditionally it begins, you know, the tradition was that it begins on a Friday night. Yeah, Friday night for 24 hours. And for some people, other traditions, it's Sunday. But I mean, if you're going to do it truly, you know, take a 24 hours.
Unplug everything, right?
Yeah. And then you do it consistently each week so that you take a moment to, and you get in touch with your family and your loved ones and you have dinner and, you know, which we call Shabbat dinner. But, you know, there are things you can do, and to me, the way that I got the most clairvoyant, because, you know, I was trained by a guru who had over a million students, and he had a few people that he trained personally. He was a grandmaster. He passed away. Mm-hmm. You know, I was trained personally by him, but I was getting, my clairvoyancy was so activated, so high, I could not function like a normal person in this world. But when I started to do Shabbat, and I grounded myself through that, my actual intuition and clairvoyancy became much more balanced. So I say this to people. There's a lot of people out there that are very intuitive already or clairvoyant or having all kinds of experiences, and they're not balanced. And I understand exactly what that means, and I cover this in my book.
Wow. That's
with solutions.
That's amazing. I can't wait to read it. She just sent it to me. Can you just very quickly, before we go on our break, can you tell my listeners, and it's a very basic thing, I'm sure, for you, but I know that a lot of people get these confused. What is the difference between clairvoyance and clairaudience? Is that the other word?
Yes, and there's also, in my book, I cover you know, a few more, but there's clairvoyance, there's clairaudience, there's deja vu, there's intuition. So here's the thing. We are all born with intuition. Everybody is.
Right.
Because that's just a part of your soul.
Yep.
Not all of us are clairvoyant. And frankly, I don't think clairvoyance is something that you should try to develop. And I'm going to tell you why in a moment.
Okay.
So number one, we have to start with the very basic. Everybody's intuitive, everyone. And I have an exercise that I teach in a class, and I can prove to people within 7 minutes how we're all intuitive. It's really incredible. So that's number one. So clairvoyancy is sort of like intuition on steroids.
Right.
So clairvoyance is you actually see information that is concealed from the normal sense, all right? So you see it, which plays out like a movie, okay? So that's how you get information. And it comes like through a movie. It can also be through dreams. Clairaudio, which is more people, you know, I've been talking to a lot more people, and more people have it than we realize. So clairaudio is where you pick up information via sound.
Okay.
So, you know, I, for instance, will use an instrument. You can hear this. Or this. So I'll use, like, instruments. And in the space between the sounds, I pick up information. Clairaudio is not a picnic. It makes you very, very, by any means, it makes you very sensitive to sound. And one way for any listeners that are struggling, if you have, if you're a clairaudio where you're always picking up information and you feel that you can't, it's not very fun, there are energy centers that some people will also call chakras that are around the head area. You can keep it covered. I always wear a hat, for instance. And there are other things that you can do, which I cover in my book. So the biggest difference between clairvoyance and clairaudio is that one is picking up information via visual, and one is picking up information via sound.
Okay, got it. That's fascinating.
I mean, do you remember one time we spoke and there was a caller in who actually spoke about she would hear a song playing on the radio, and when she'd hear this song, she would know things that were about to happen.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, well, and she was very uncomfortable with it, and I said, well, don't listen to that song.
Awesome. On that note, we're going to go to a little commercial break. And when we come back, we'll dive in further into the four archetypes of the aura.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away, a place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you, the enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free to be me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
A bright future starts with a healthy lifestyle.
Pinocchio!
Good nutrition and physical activity are fuel for your child's mind and body.
Now you're talking!
And the food pyramid will help you find the right balance of everything you and your child need. Grains, vegetables, fruits, oils, milk, and meats and beans.
Nothing can stop me now.
Just remember, smart choices from every food group, along with the right amount of physical activity, can put everyone on the path to better health.
Look, the fishing star.
You don't have to make a wish for a healthier you to come true. Just eat right.
Here's an apple.
Be active.
Come on, I'll race you home.
And make it balance.
Attaboy, Pano.
A healthy lifestyle can lead to great things for you and your child. Visit MyPyramid.gov to learn more. That's MyPyramid.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Now back to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen with Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Jennifer Grace, and I am talking with author Tiger Khan all about her new book. Before we dive in, Tiger, talking about the four archetypes of auras in your book, would you let them know where they can get your book, darling?
Oh, yes. So it's available on Amazon. And also Book Baby, but you can go to Amazon, and it's available now. They actually released it a little bit early. So just go to Amazon and its other sellers, and it's available.
Yeah, and the name of the book is Intuition, Language of the Soul by Tiger, TYGERKAHN. Awesome. Are you still doing readings as well or no?
Yes, there is a waiting list, but for people that for people that are interested in sessions, it's by phone only. That's how I've worked for many.
That way, it was amazing.
Yeah,
I took pictures of myself and sent them to you. You must have read my aura.
Exactly. That's, and we're going to talk about the aura in a moment.
Yeah.
But yes, if, I hope people don't mind, but there is a waiting list. But that's all right. I'm a big believer that people, we work together when we're supposed to.
Exactly, in that right moment. And they can schedule a reading with you just by going to your website?
Yes, which is Tiger Khan, T-Y-G-E-R, Khan, K-A-H-N, tigerkhan.com. And you'll see Contact Tiger, and it will lead you to Tiger Assistant. And please just send an email. And like I said, we will sift through everything, and we will work together when we're supposed to. In the meanwhile, I definitely suggest you buy this book, because a lot of, like, it's not, it wasn't just 7 years of writing. It's a lifetime of information there.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right. So you talk about four archetypes of auras in your book. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yes, so just so everybody knows, these are four main archetypes that I'm covering in book one. In book two, I'm going to extend it a little further, but mostly we are all, you can get, you can find yourself in one of these categories, or maybe, you know, two of these categories, okay? So the first one that I wrote about, I call the mentalist. And being in the Pacific Northwest, certainly we have a lot of that. And the mentalist is an innovator of thought. And there's a very specific color to this type of person's aura. And I get into what their gifts are, and what some of their challenges are, and some solutions regarding that. A spiritualist, which a lot of people doing this kind of work, you know, that we're doing, you know, the spiritualist aura also has a very particular, not just color, but pattern. So that's the other thing. People in their auras have specific colors and specific patterns that I've noticed over years and years and years of looking at this. I mean, it isn't just 20 years of experience. It's also that, you know, I was born this way, right? I thought everybody saw lights around people. Little did I know, right? And it made for an interesting childhood. But because I come from seers, you know, fortunately, my family understood it a little better. But, and I don't just come from seers. They've been in my family for generations upon generations. I mean, they're in the Jewish Encyclopedia. So that aspect of it was a little easier to deal with. But anyways, back to the four archetypes, I saw specific patterns and specific colors. So like I said, you know, the mentalist, and I'm not going to give away the color, I want people to go buy the book, is a person that if you know how to deal with, you'll be able to work with their strengths instead of the challenges. And but one thing I will say for people that are a mentalist and that are people that are very brilliant, one, I give remedies on how to balance out the aura. And for them, people that are very brilliant do better when they learn to play an instrument to actually calm themselves down. It's fascinating. The spiritualist is a person who is a connector of worlds. So they can see connections running through, you know, the multi-worlds that we live in, right? We live in a physical world. We live in a spiritual world. There's the, you know, the animal world. There's the natural world, you know, the elements and stuff. So they make connections. And so whether we're psychics or healers or naturopaths or acupuncturists or people that work with plants, you know what I mean, or children or animals, they make connections, and they have a very specific aura. Now, here's my favorite, believe it or not, because most people don't think they're spiritual, the athlete. Can you believe it? I have worked with athletes, and I'm going to tell you something. I have seen in the athletic aura, people with the biggest hearts. They transform through their physicality. They transform the world through physicality. And you're and you might wonder why I say the athlete actually has a very big heart center or heart chakra. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Okay, think about it. When was the last time you ever saw somebody in Microsoft or in the banking world, get down on one knee and do a prayer in front of millions of people?
Yeah, no.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
Okay, so the athlete will, a lot of times, you know, these big athletes, they'll get out in the super, wherever, they get down on one knee and they do a prayer. So their ego, on one hand, they have these, you know, anybody to have to do what they do, whatever kind of performer, you know, has a giant ego, but yet they like humble themselves. They have huge hearts. So I was fascinated by the, you know, the athletes that I worked with. Again, they have a very specific aura, and they transform through their physicality. And one thing they have to learn is how to control their their very strong animal desires, and how to channel that to help them stay connected. And then the other person I covered, because I work a lot with performers, is the artist. And their aura is the most variable, the most, I mean, changeable, just like the artists themselves, right? And they, they're inspirational. And they can actually be their worst enemies. And so there's, like, their strengths and their challenges, and I get into with that. But the other three have more fixed patterns in their aura as opposed to the artist, which is, can be all over the place.
Right. We know about that. And I'm sure, you know, with archetypes, it's interesting. It's like the healthiest thing is almost to blend them all, right? And have a piece of you in everything. Would you agree to that?
Yes. And I'm a big believer, to be honest, in that you have specific gifts.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're very artistic, right? So, of course, you would say that. You know what I mean? Because the artist is the person, you know, that will want to blend, and that's very particular for your
Architect. Or,
yeah, your aura.
Right.
You know, that feels natural for you. But for other people, it's very important to stay focused. Actually, for all of us, it's important to stay focused. So I think that we come here with inherent gifts, inherent strengths and weaknesses, and our weaknesses are actually our greatest gifts. And our gifts can be lead us down the wrong path. So I think it's very important to work with what you have, to stay focused, and to grow that so that you become extremely powerful. And I think sometimes when we try and blend everything, we get a little scattered.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. I mean, I always am sharing that with my students. So many of us are trying to overcome our weaknesses and where we're falling short and get better in those areas. I'm like, don't do that. Focus on your strengths and hire other people who can help you with your weaknesses.
Yeah.
And do what you do well.
In my
your
book,
gift is.
And for instance, okay, I will say something about the spiritualist, all right? So a lot of people that work in the spiritual community are very sensitive. They have really sensitive auras, and they have a very specific color in their aura. Like, for instance, somebody, I will share this, somebody who works with animals, animal communicators, and people that work with children of special needs, so they have aquamarine in their aura. It never fails. When I look, when I see somebody, and I, you know, and they ask me to take a look at them, and I see aquamarine in their aura, I immediately say, "Do you work with animals, and do you work with children with special needs?" And they always say yes. It's fascinating. It's a very specific color. They're very, very sensitive, and part of the challenge is with this type of individual, because of their sensitivity, they isolate. Right? And, you know, they isolate from society, and they can become very lonely. And they're so gifted at communicating with people that are animals, yet they themselves are usually very lonely because they're isolating themselves. So one of the remedies I say to them, in the book, once a week they have to socialize in a group. Whether they like it or not, it will help them. And I actually gave this to somebody who was very, very lonely, yet incredibly gifted, and now she's actually married, and she has a child, and she's really happy, which leads to my next thing I want to talk about. So I get into a chapter on soulmates, which I think everybody wants to know about, frankly.
Yes, I do too.
You do?
No, I have found my soulmate, but I believe that everybody wants to know about this.
Okay, well, mazel tov that you found your soulmate.
What?
Mazel tov that you found your soulmate. Congratulations.
He's delicious.
That's amazing. Well, so I'll cover a Kabbalistic thought that the Baal Shem Tov, who I'm descended from, what he said about soulmates. So he said 40 days before you were born, you are matched up with your soulmate, and you come down in this world, and you're looking, you know, for your other half, right?
Right.
So, if that's the case, why is it so hard to find your soulmate?
Right. Right.
You know, why do most people, they're not with their soulmate, and you know why?
Why? I don't.
Because your soul desires another soul, correct?
Yeah.
Think about what a soulmate is. Your soul wants to have a companion for its soul. Now, your body wants to satisfy its desires and wants a playmate, not so much a soulmate, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times we'll get confused and we'll say, oh, well, you know, I met this person and there were sparks and there was energy and on and on and on and on. And, oh, this is the one, when really that was just your body, you know.
Right.
Saying, you know, this is the one. Your soul doesn't work like that. It takes time to develop. And I'll give you a couple of hints. Again, I get into it in my book, but your soulmate is almost inevitably going to be the least person you expect. That's for starters. Yeah. Because usually what is in your mind as to what your soulmate is, that's coming again from your desires rather than like what your soul really needs to help you develop in this world. The other thing with a soulmate is that the two of you will the combination of your energies actually give to the community at large rather than just yourself.
Yeah. Got it. Wow. You're such a wealth of knowledge. You're amazing.
Oh,
really?
Well, thank you. I mean, this information, a lot of this information is out there. If people, you know, but you have to know where to look and possibly speak another language. And
yeah.
No, but I mean, there's a lot of information that's out there. I mean, I'm happy to recommend some books and some sites, but also again,
well, your book is a culmination of all of this, you know?
Yeah, that's what I tried to do. And that's why it took me 7 years because I had to condense it and also make it so that sort of user friendly so that we can understand it on a very practical level.
Yes. And what are your thoughts on journaling, using journaling as a tool for cultivation of intuition, of getting to know yourself and opening up space?
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic. And again, so for one, the more that you write, you are going to, and it's funny because they actually say that people to develop a genius, most geniuses actually journaled or made a lot of scribbles. And it's like, did the chicken come before the egg? Which one happened first? Did they get very intelligent because they were always writing notes or vice versa, you know? So it's very important to just continually develop your mind. But again, to be truly, really get in touch with your soul, there's a couple of things that I will go over. Number one, when you do a good deed or what we call mitzvah, your soul dances inside. See, most everyday living, your body literally takes your soul and puts it in the basement. Okay? It buries the soul because all day long we're spent with the body's desires, right? But when you do one physical thing that's a good deed, so for instance, tithing, all right? You want to become more intuitive? Trust me, tithe. Give to, you know, tithe to a charity or a person or, you know, a situation in need. Your soul is dancing inside. That's number one, okay? Number two, when you go and you go for a walk, whether it's in a park or a forest or on the beach or wherever you can, and you just walk outside and you connect, go talk to God. Even if you feel about anything and everything, you can talk about the date that you went on that, you know, the guy was like a schmo or whatever. You know what I mean? Nothing is too small not to. So then again, your soul is happy because your soul knows that you come from the divine. So all of a sudden your soul starts to rise. So the idea is that, so when you, for instance, journal, you are activating your mind. But to activate your soul, you have to do things that feed your soul. And what feeds your soul is ways to make a connection to greatness. And how we make a connection to greatness is by doing good deeds in the world. And then, and also to be in the natural world. So, you know, and all, you know, for instance, if you, a lot of people are paddleboarding right now. All right. I think paddleboarding is fantastic if you are physically able to do it.
Yeah, I love it. It's one of my
favorite
things.
Yeah, you go out and you go out into the water. Yeah. And there's a Kabbalistic secret about water that it's very interesting. Water purifies. And I get into a little bit more about it in my book. But water has a lot of purification in it. So when you go out there and you cleanse yourself, and you stay connected, that's a great way to develop your intuition, believe it or not. Yeah. And it's a very physical way.
That's amazing. I'm doing that naturally. Look at me.
Yeah. A lot of people, but so when we have the awareness, so when we combine our physical actions with awareness, that helps develop our intuition. See, most people think we have to, like, go lock ourselves up in an ashram somewhere or in a room and sit and meditate in order to be spiritual, but that's really not the case. It might help us get to a point where we feel more spiritual. But I got to tell you, people that go in, you know, take firemen, you know, that go into like, and they have a very specific aura. They're under the athletic aura. When they go in and they do the things they do, let me tell you, they're incredibly spiritual. And I have worked with firemen, and I got to tell you, their auras are just out of this world. I mean, they are about as strong as yogis. And see, most people don't know that, right? You don't think about that. And that's the misconception I get into in my book.
Mm. Wow. I always guide my students to be in nature. And we do an entire kind of module on this where I guide them to take color walks, go outside and do physical activity, but only be focusing on that color or the sound of the wind or the way that the sun is hitting their face, and like really be in the moment with whatever you're doing. And I say this will cultivate your intuition, because that's where I get so many downloads, is when I am surrounded by nature and my mind is in the present and I'm really focusing on all five senses. You know, I may go to just listening, or I may go to just feeling or smelling. But when I do that, it's like I become this open channel for information, for creativity, for guidance. So I love that you are confirming that.
Oh yeah. Listen, I'll tell you a little story here. But again, compared to my ancestral grandfather, I mean, this is nothing. So my ancestral grandfather is the Baal Shem Tov. He's a very famous, one of the greatest mystics that Judaism has ever known. He was very famous for walking and praying in the woods. He could understand the language of trees, of animals, I encourage people to look him up. And his message was all about brotherly love, serving God through brotherly love. Anyways, so when I was walking through the forest, I like to study and really study the language. And there was the trees. And you know, of course, I'm not saying I'm one that can understand what the trees are saying. But you can pick up impressions, although my grandfather could. You can pick up impressions. And one day I was in there, and I kept picking up an impression of a birth. And I picked up an impression that somebody was going to be pregnant, somebody I knew, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I, you know, after my fourth walk, I go home and I make a call. You know, she had longed for this child, this specific friend, and she was very quiet. And she goes, "I haven't even told my husband yet." It was very interesting. So you know, we can, you know, nothing is hidden from the Creator, right? And the information, since we are all part of a holographic universe, one can say, the information is there. Now, here's another thing that I get into in my book. So by going into the forest, I have learned some weather patterns, very specific ones. You know, by going into, I go into the same forest. I have been going in there for 7.5 years. Throughout my recovery, while I was recovering from cancer and everything else, and I just go to the same part and I watch it, because the forest is never the same. Never the same. I mean, something will have always changed from day to day, hour to hour in the forest. Something will move, something, you know? And if you really want to learn a language of something, you immerse yourself in it. So, for instance, if you wanted to learn, let's say, Portuguese, you wouldn't go to, I don't know, France to learn Portuguese, really. You would go to a Portuguese, you know, town and immerse yourself in the culture to understand it, right? So the same with the language of the forest. And so I recommend people to even observe, like you said, just observe, and you'll start to develop mindfulness.
Yeah.
And mindfulness, where we're not always just looking at our phones, because right now the current mindfulness is, you know, what's on WhatsApp or whatever. It's very scary.
Yeah.
So anybody who wants to develop intuition, go out to nature. I don't care if it's a park and it's a daily park or even a walk around your block. You're going to start to notice things, and it will change you and make you more mindful, which will connect you to intuition.
Beautiful. Well, we are now at the end of our show. Can you believe how this flew?
No.
It's amazing. I am so grateful that you came on today to share this incredible wisdom and your own journey. It has been so extraordinary for me, Tiger. It's been life-changing for me. Like, I can't wait to go meditate and use your psalms and read your book. One more time, if you could let them know how to get your book if they signed in late.
Yes, so it's Intuition, Language of the Soul. You can go on Amazon. It's available for pre-order. And it's, again, oh, and I even have, this might kind of blow people's minds, so I even have Troy Carter, who is the CEO of Atom Factory. He's Lady Gaga's ex-manager.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do this plug. Tiger Khan has written a wonderful book that the world needs to read. Her soul-filling anecdotes leave you with both questions and answers. So that's on the back of the book, and it's available on Amazon, so feel free to go in and order it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and this is Jennifer Grace. And remember, this is as real as it's gonna get.